I'm not sure what day this will end up being posted, so we won't put a file name or a date or a podcast number. Yeah. So this is going to be, but the name that we've been using, and then we're correcting it, is Raising a Nonviolent Family. So this will be part four of Raising a Nonviolent Family.
I thought we changed it to Non-Aggressive.
Well, we did in the way we talked about it, but we already named the first file Nonviolent. So since the file series is, we're stuck with the Nonviolent, then now, so we'll have to correct it with each one. I suppose that's kind of what we're doing if we leave this in.
True.
Part four, Raising a Nonviolent Family, but we're actually talking about raising a non-aggressive family. Mm-hmm. They can be wildly violent.
We have no problem with violence as long as it's not aggressive violence.
There's a Facebook picture that I liked. It's like a cartoon of this playground with kids all over the place. Have you seen that? And they're hitting each other with baseball bats and toy swords, and it says homeschool kids. When the zombie apocalypse hits, the homeschool kids will have the advantage because mm-hmm. they've known how to melee and team fight, and public school kids will have no chance. Anyway, so
public school kids will line up in a line and be eaten.
Public school kids will be the zombies. Unfortunately. Okay, so we're starting out with insulting people. That's how we're going to start this podcast, by just separating a segment of the population and insulting them. Let's attack people with big noses,
Keeping in mind that you went to public school for your entire school curriculum, and I went to public school for the majority of my schooling curriculum.
So it is possible to come out of public school and still have a freedom, liberty-minded, maybe makes you a little twisted.
It takes years to recover. It makes school very unpleasant.
Yeah, I would say that. School was, for me, it was just horrible. I hated it. Now, there were aspects of school that I liked. Like, there was one in the years and years and all the different schools that I went to, there was one teacher I liked.
Yeah, I think I had one English teacher I liked and like one science teacher that I liked.
And this social factor that I made a lot of friends in school. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, we moved a lot when I was a kid. Unlike your
what's that like?
Because Kai moved a lot too. We should do an introduction.
We should, because I think people who we've had a lot of new listeners come in, and they may be going, well, how are you qualified in talking about raising a nonviolent family?
I'm Ben.
I'm Kai. Hi.
We didn't do any of the intro stuff. So Kai is my daughter. I'm Ben Stone, and Kai is my daughter. And as far as I know, we are the only anarchist father-daughter podcasting team on the entire internet.
Can we put in a couple more
qualifiers?
Yeah. In based out of Ohio. Yeah.
Not always, because sometimes wherever the motorhome takes us.
That's true.
So Kai is my adult daughter. She has her own life and everything, and she's kind enough to stop by my house sometimes to visit either with me or visit my wife and I. And when she's doing that, she will often donate her time, and we'll do a podcast. We try to do at least one podcast a week as a team. And sometimes we can get more than that done. But that's sort of our introduction. Now, in raising Kai, and Kai has a brother and a sister who are not with us on the podcast today.
But who have...
They have both been on the podcast, multiple times for your sister and once for your brother.
Yeah.
But part of the experience that we are trying to share is from both a father and a daughter perspective on child raising, and as an adult, as both of us as adults, even what we learned as children and as adults, and we're trying to bring that all together and come, and we're not portraying that, you know, I've said this before, that I made a lot of mistakes raising my children. And the key is to be able to find those mistakes and correct them as early as possible, mm-hmm. or at least to work out those mistakes with your adult children so that they don't continue to repeat those same mistakes. So that's, in a sense, that's kind of what we're working out in this. It's mm-hmm. kind of like almost therapeutic between us. But
in a minute, we'll get out the giant foam bats and start smacking each other with them.
In the raising of my children, there was quite a bit of moving involved. We went, you know, cross country a number of times. We were actually
during the younger years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because once I hit about junior high and mm-hmm. we moved here, we kind of settled.
Yeah, yeah. We've spent like 15 years straight right here in this yeah. house. But prior to that, we moved quite a few times. We moved all the way across country a couple times. We have gone through phases of homelessness, mm-hmm. you know, and we didn't look
we
at it that way.
We weren't homeless. We were camping.
We went on an extended vacation where we camped throughout the West.
It was an adventure.
And got our food naturally from streams and whatnot. But, yeah, we did have a variety of experiences. We have, during the course of raising the kids, my wife and I homeschooled. We had them in private school. We had them in public school. We even had our own unofficial version of unschooling or non-schooling.
How can you have an unofficial version of unschooling? Isn't that just unschooling?
We didn't recognize any authority to tell us we were unschooling.
You were unschooling before unschooling was hip?
Yeah. But a variety of experiences, and it was even different for each of my three kids. The youngest of my three kids spent pretty much their whole school career mm-hmm. in public school.
Yeah, she went from what, first through graduating yeah. high school, all in the same
district. Yeah, in the same school district. Yeah,
which is very bizarre. Weird. To me, I can't really even fathom that idea.
For me, when I was a child, my family moved even more often mm-hmm. than I moved you guys. I can't remember now. I'd have to sit down and really do the math and add things up. But I think I switched schools something like 16 times or 14 times or some crazy number like that I switched schools. Mm-hmm. And I graduated high school, but I graduated because I went ahead. So I graduated ahead, mm-hmm. you know, so I didn't graduate with my class, so
right.
to speak. Which was pretty much my design, because when I got to, I was in a particular school that had, their school colors, mm-hmm. I mean, were, I think it was red and white. And so they were going to have all the graduating seniors dress up in these red gown things. Mm-hmm. And my statement was, look, I'm not going to play that game. I'm just not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to dress up in a little red dress and prance around for you people. I'm not going to do it. Well, you can't get your diploma if you don't do that. Really? Really? Is that so? Well, we'll just see about that.
Yeah.
So that was my, you know, so I ended up getting my diploma and graduating well ahead of the rest of my class because I realized that I wasn't going to put up with that nonsense. I was done.
Yeah.
Now, you took a different course.
Well, see, you have a tendency to work with the system to get what you want out of it. And I have a tendency to go, I don't need that.
And that's pretty much what Kai did when you got, a 16 or 17 or something, when you just decided,
I was 17 at the time. It was halfway through what should have been my junior year, but was really... by their books, my
yeah.
freshman year.
Yeah.
Because I had not...
You had already shut down and stopped trying.
You know? Yeah. You know, when you're getting, you know, 20s mm-hmm. in your classes...
out of 100.
Out of 100%, you're getting like
20%. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, at this rate, you're going to graduate when you're 21. Oh, really? Well, then I'm just going to leave. How about that? How about I just leave?
And this was, you were getting this kind of grades because you were dumb?
No. Because I didn't want to spend 8 hours in school a day and then go home and spend 8 hours a day at homework.
Yeah.
I didn't need that. There was stuff on the internet that I wanted to do.
Plus, whenever they would do something like assign you reading material that you didn't approve of, you would just not do it.
There were some issues with them trying to get me to read Steinbeck, and I wasn't going to do that. I read Of Mice and Men, and then I went, you know, I'm not going to read this dude again.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, that was my, I did Grapes of Wrath, and I did that, and I went, you know what? I am done with this. I do not want to ever read anything this individual wrote again.
I believe there was an incident where my high school English teacher came up to me and told me that I needed to read the assignment, which was Grapes of Wrath,
mm-hmm.
while I was reading Nietzsche. And I said, no. Like, wait, oh, you want me to stop reading Nietzsche to read Steinbeck?
Did you make some kind of an argument with the teacher as to whether the teacher actually existed? Or would that have been Jung? Was that Jung?
I think that was... Jung did a lot in the sort of metaphysical...
Yeah, I get all those wackos confused.
I loved the existentialists.
So we're totally not on the topic.
But anyway, that's where we're coming from.
We were on the topic. We're doing an introduction.
Yes, introductions.
Well, okay, so then, now you had some...
So you've come to anarchy through reading and learning and...
Yeah, I was left with no other option.
Right.
I was doing libertarian activity. I was doing activist, libertarian activist. You like that pronunciation?
Activist.
I was doing libertarian activist stuff in the late 70s, going door to door with spreading material and getting signatures for ballot issues and that kind of thing in the late 70s. And then I kind of got disinvolved and I got more involved in raising a family and things like this. But also, in the Reagan years, there was this, especially in the early Reagan years, there was this, almost like a slumber that came into most of the libertarians that I knew mm-hmm. at the time. And because Reagan had like,
a siren song?
Almost. I was thinking more a dragon. Yeah. How a dragon will partially hypnotize you if mm-hmm. if you stop and look at the dragon in the eyes, or if you speak to a dragon, he will hypnotize you and he will, cause you to...
Totally forget who you are and what you're doing.
Yeah. So that's kind of what the circle that I knew of libertarians, that's kind of what Reagan's words did in the early 80s. He would say things like, the answer is not more government, or the problem is we don't need more. I'm messing up his quote, but he would say we don't need more government. The problem is the government.
Mm-hmm.
Or he would say, the idea that a small group of intellectuals in Washington D.C. can dictate to the rest of us how to live our lives. I mean, that's just like dripping honey
mm-hmm.
for libertarians. That's like ooh, wow. And so there was this slumbering effect that took place in the early 80s. And by the late 80s, I was kind of coming out of that and realizing, man, this is just a nasty joke.
Mm-hmm.
And like any other kind of haze that your mind comes out of, there's a little bit of a hangover that goes with it. So I was active in the Republican Party in the late 80s. And watching the direction, if you're too young to remember it, if you do a little research on what was happening in the Republican Party around 87 or so, there were a lot of liberty activists and libertarian-minded people that were attempting to have a voice in the Republican Party. And the George Herbert Walker Bush branch of the Republican Party basically just stepped in and squished us like we were a little weak bug.
Mm-hmm.
And in 88, I ripped up my Republican Party card, I was a stand-in delegate to the California Convention for Republican Convention for 1988. And I literally ripped up my card, told them they could keep their little convention and my card, and I'm done with them. And I voted for Ron Paul as a libertarian in 1988. And even at that point, I consider that I was very juvenile as a libertarian. I didn't have a lot of reading background. I didn't know a lot of the stuff that convinces people to be libertarian.
You were working full time. You had three little kids to...
Yeah. You know. So it wasn't until much later, well up into the year. Well, actually, now let's leap ahead. When you were in junior high, mm-hmm. you started grasping the concepts of anarchy. Mm-hmm. And so in trying to discuss these issues with you...
Because I was a anti-authoritarian kid with the internet at my disposal.
Yeah. So as the 90s developed... you developed more towards anarchy, and mm-hmm. into the 2000s, you went in that direction. And I was forced to reevaluate libertarianism using the only tool that I had, which was my own mind, mm-hmm. and what I had already, the presuppositions that I already had, and the beliefs of libertarianism that I already had. So in order to counter your natural anarchism, I had to... do some learning on my on my libertarianism. So then in educating myself more thoroughly on what libertarianism was, I was forced into the logical conclusion that the only way you can be a consistent libertarian is if you're an anarchist. Mm-hmm. You can paint yourself as a libertarian, But unless you really accept the zero aggression principle and all the repercussions that go with it,
right.
really you're just playing word games. Now that's how we got to where we are.
Right.
Did I leave anything off?
Well, I mean, you definitely came at it from a reading all of the books and doing all of the logical thinking and coming to the conclusion of anarchy is... morally, and, you know...
Anarchy is natural.
Right.
It's the only moral position.
And I sort of came at it from the position of, you know, I was an anarchist. That I was never anything else. And over the years, I have learned more of the logical arguments as to why that position works. Mm-hmm. You know, but for me, you know, I mean... a wild dog is an anarchist too, but he can't tell you why, you know?
We use a better example. A beautiful sparrow.
Sure.
A butterfly is an anarchist. He just doesn't know it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I never really, you know, even to this day, I'm educating myself more and more, mm-hmm. But... You know, I still get to that position where people are like, well, what about, you know, whatever.
XYZ, yeah.
And I'm just like, look, if you don't intrinsically understand that anarchy is the best way, I can't help you.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'll throw the, before we go on, okay, no, I'll go in this direction. I'm stuttering right now. I fall back into stuttering at times. If you're new to the podcast, sometimes I stutter. We could go back and replay the brain damage podcast, and that would explain that. And the reason this has application, what we're talking about, is because raising a non-aggressive family is based squarely on understanding and accepting and walking through mm-hmm. the non-aggression principle. And that's the foundation of everything we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the grasp, if you don't have a grasp on the on this foundational principle of non-aggression, then it's pretty much impossible to take that out and have a non-aggressive family and mm-hmm. teach them to be non-aggressive. So it's all based on that fundamental principle. Now, what you were saying there about just naturally understanding it, see, that was my position with libertarianism, mm-hmm. is that like when I heard Ronald Reagan say those things, I knew it was right.
Right.
Even though my eyes were telling me, but this guy's not doing it.
Right.
I still knew that that was right. And so it was a big leap to go from what he's saying is right, but he's not living it, he's not doing it, mm-hmm. he's a politician, he's lying to
right.
me. That separation was a little bit of a mental exercise for me in the 80s. But then later, when I started really getting to like to read Rothbard stuff, to read Murray Rothbard stuff, and especially in For a New Liberty, When I first started going through For a New Liberty, it was like this guy was putting a logical reason for things that I had always believed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I can't even explain the feeling to know that I wasn't crazy,
mm-hmm.
that these things that I feel by nature are based on what we all should be feeling by
right.
nature. And that there's logical purposes for all this stuff. It was really quite refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a child, many of the authority in my life were very quick to, you know, slap a label, you mm-hmm. know, anti-establishment, anti-authority,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Problem.
Personality disorders. And it's like, well, no, you just have an illegitimate authority. You know? But it's hard. It's very hard when you have a liberty-minded individual who's growing up without the structure of saying, these are the tools that you need.
Yeah.
Because without those tools,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're lost.
Yeah.
You know, you have no recourse of what to do with those feelings. And I feel really bad because, you know, you look at, like, all of the Occupy protesters right
mm-hmm.
now. And
yeah.
these are all this same line of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this
That's
same
where their
feeling
frustration
of,
comes from.
This is not right. You mm-hmm. people should not have the authority to do this. This is not acceptable. But they don't have the tools to say, here's what can be done about it. Here's
right.
why this is wrong, you
yeah.
know. And so they're attacking at face value.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not able to see what the real heart of the matter is.
Yeah. We, in an earlier podcast months ago, we beat up Michael Moore on this
mm-hmm.
same topic. Because even as disgusting as a human being as he is, he sees something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't know what he's seeing, and he doesn't know what's wrong, and he doesn't know why it's wrong.
Right.
And he doesn't have enough knowledge base to make any kind of solid conclusions. But even from his point of view, he knows there's something wrong.
Right.
He just can't put the pieces of the puzzle together and see the real picture.
Right.
So he leaps to the thing that he's been told is wrong.
Yep.
Which is wrong. So even, and now from what you were saying a second ago, from a parental point of view, trying to deal with a child that was going through what you're just describing, you know, when all of the pressures on a parent are saying you have to behave in this way, you have to treat your child this way, you have to bring your child into line by doing this thing,
mm-hmm.
you have to get your child to behave by doing this. And when all the pressures in life are telling the parent to act like that with your child, and that's entirely wrong,
right?
It becomes, even if deep in your mind you know it's wrong, everybody else is telling you got to do it this way.
Right.
So if you don't have some kind of encouragement to tell you, look, if you want a nonviolent child who is emotionally stable and can stand on their own two feet, then treat them as another human being
mm-hmm.
with rights and treat them the way that you know want them to be. Don't necessarily try to conform them and make them like all the other drones.
I have this issue a lot with parents who are you know, raising their children, and they say, oh, well, you know, who's the parent here? You know? Well, if you want a child that does exactly what they're told and never thinks about it and just does what every...
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, do that. Great.
Yeah.
Go for it. But if you're looking for an independent, intelligent, thoughtful, articulate child...
Yeah.
Then that's the opposite of what you need to do.
Right.
And I get...
You can lead by example,
mm-hmm.
but you can't use the authoritarian hand to accomplish this.
I especially get frustrated, and I mean, I know we've gone over with young children in other podcasts, but, you know, you have these children who you've been running around all day, and your kid's cranky because they're hungry, and they miss their nap, and they're tired, and, you know, they have an emotional meltdown, and people expect that you come down and punish them for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you know, if your spouse comes home from work and is grumpy and tired and hasn't eaten all day and
mm-hmm.
is in a grumpy state of mind and lashes out and starts an argument, you don't hit them.
Or shove them in their room.
Yeah. You don't, you don't take their property away from them for that. Mm-hmm. You can explain, hey, you know, this is the way you're behaving, and I don't appreciate it, and I want, you know, you don't have to be a doormat, but right. At the same time, I wouldn't treat my husband like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't,
or a neighbor or friend or right. a relative or any other person.
But because it is a small person, mm-hmm. it's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's like what we were talking about with babies early on. I think it was in the first episode where a lot of people tell you, just put the baby in a room by itself and let it cry. Mm-hmm. Well, would you do that with your grandmother?
Right.
You know, would you do that if you have a person who's 22 and they're for the first time out on their own in their own apartment in a city where they don't know a lot of people? Should they just sit in their room and cry alone?
Right.
Is that a good therapeutic way to handle, you know? No, here's the thing of it with a baby, and it's what I said in the first episode also, is they're a human being just like anybody else.
Right.
And so I'm not sure that you can hold a baby too much. Old-time parents will tell you, well, you're going to spoil that baby.
Yeah.
You better put him down. Yeah, yes and no. Yes, put the baby down, let it crawl around, let it, you know, mm-hmm. eat a bug now and then or whatever. Only healthy bugs. But badquaker.com does not condone the eating of bugs or the feeding of bugs to babies. But
bugs are healthy.
Yeah, well, important. Actually, they
important
are.
Important source of protein and crunchiness.
But if the baby needs to be held, it's because it's a human being, mm-hmm. and it's been up close and essentially it's been hugged for 9 months of its first existence. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like all alone in a weird world where stuff is not touching it. And sometimes it just needs to be held. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it needs to be held for hours nonstop. Mm-hmm. It needs that because everybody does. Mm-hmm. I mean, really? Mm-hmm. Doesn't everybody? And so if something that's good when you're 30... or good when you're 50, mm-hmm. or good when you're 70, how is that not good when you're 2?
Yeah, and, oh, you're going to get it dependent on you.
Mm-hmm.
So?
You're going to get it dependent on the love of another human being.
It is dependent on you.
It absolutely is, yeah, yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, so you're going to get it dependent on the love of another human being.
And guess what? No matter how much you hold the kid when they're, mm-hmm. you know, an infant, mm-hmm. they're still going to be a teenager and they're still going to think you're uncool and they're still not going to want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
And not only that, when you get to be a certain age, when you, if you've had children and you go through all the things of raising them and getting them out on their own and they're off doing their own thing and you become elderly and you're sitting there all alone in your house, are you going to think through your mind, you know, I'm sure glad I didn't hold that baby any more than I did.
Yeah.
Or are you going to have every single memory of holding that baby mm-hmm. is going to be like gold to you?
Yeah. I mean, you only get a couple of years of that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's and then a you limited. Don't, you don't get to do it anymore.
It's a limited commodity.
it frustrates me mm-hmm. when people treat children like they're not human.
Yeah. Now, we did have some requests, specifically in the area of covering the topic of bullies. Not only for children, mm-hmm. but the problem of bullies, you face bullies from the first day that you go to a preschool or kindergarten or first day in first grade or whatever. You face that
first
all
time you
the
go
way.
Out to the park.
Yeah. All the way until you're an old person and you're facing bullies in the old folks' home. I mean, bullies, you know, we have them. It's something that all of us have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So in talking about bullies, we can talk about it in regards to child raising. And then most of that's also going to apply as we get older. And, you know, now, and I should give a disclaimer, moving schools as often as I did, I went through quite a few levels of experimentation to figure out how to deal with bullies because I had every time I changed school, there's a new bully. Mm-hmm. And every time you're the new person in school, the bully is attracted to you, you know,
moths to a...
Yeah, to a flame. The bullies, the new guy is a bully attractant. So I would always have to deal with the bully.
That new kid smell.
And not having the foundation of the zero aggression principle, I went through different attempts to deal with the bully. Ignore them. You know, mom always tells you, I'm not attacking.
Ignore them. They'll go away.
Yeah, ignore them and they'll go away. No, they won't. They'll hit you in the back of the head when you're walking down the hall. That's what they'll do.
Tell the teacher.
The teacher will tell them to stop bullying you, and then the kid will hit you in the back of the head twice as hard when you're walking down the hall.
Right.
Then telling the teacher is not the answer. The teacher is the problem.
Yeah.
and this goes to, what is the source of the bully? What creates the bully? Well, actually, like pretty much everything else that's wrong in society, the state creates the bully.
Mm-hmm.
The state creates the bully on so many levels. First off, the state itself is a picture, is an example of the bully. It is somebody who lives off of other people, who knocks us down, takes our lunch money. That's what the state does.
Mm-hmm.
If we complain, they'll flush your head in the toilet.
Right.
That's what the bully does. That's what the state does. They'll lie. If they're caught, they'll lie.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the state does. They will deceive authorities. They will deceive the people they're stealing from. This is everything that we're talking about. A bully is the state.
Well, the thing that you have to understand, I mean, like, you know, we've talked about this before. The state is not a being. The state
right.
doesn't exist.
Right.
The state, you know, you can't go knock on the state's door.
Right.
The state is a frame of mind.
Yeah.
It's this idea. It's this mentality that you have that and I want it, so I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
That is the state. When you boil it down, mm-hmm. what causes the state? The state is caused by people who are not acting according to property rights.
Right. So, for instance, a different angle of that is one person says, I don't like the fact that you're wearing a green shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to use the authority of the state to make it against the law for you to wear your green shirt, because
mm-hmm.
I don't like green shirts. I'm offended by green shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have somebody else. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
That's part of the thing of the state. I can put off the task to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I can assign someone else. And they'll go and beat you up because you're a green shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do it. I'm innocent.
Right.
See? There's no blame for me. That's just the law. They're
right.
just obeying the law, you know. And so we can hide the responsibility for our actions by using the state.
And
somebody gets to beat you up over your green shirt, and they don't get in trouble because they're working for the state.
Right.
And somebody can pass a law, no green shirts, and then they don't have to go enforce it. That's the state.
Yeah.
So.
And
that's all a bully.
And when you begin to foster this bully mentality, even from, you know, the earliest age, when you say, now, kids, you have to share,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is this mentality of, you need to give me what you have.
Yeah. You don't actually own any property. Everything is owned by all of us
mm-hmm.
and metered out by the authority.
So on a sort of social level, to remove bullies, what you need to do is teach everyone to respect property rights.
Exactly.
But, you know, as anarchists and libertarians, we're often accused of living in a fantasy world.
Right.
You know, the world that we're in right now has bullies.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they run the game.
Yeah. And so what do you do?
Starting out in school, and just to emphasize what we've already been, this dead horse we've already been beating, starting off with school, the bully is created in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, this is the beginning of the bully, because you have the person who is the authority, who we're supposed to respect and call Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so or teacher or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a title. First off, that's the first step in creating the authorization for the state and for bullying,
mm-hmm.
is that you give someone a title that designates them as more important or more powerful
mm-hmm.
or more authority than everybody else. So first we have a title, okay, and then that person gets to decide who can talk and who has to be quiet, who can get up and go to the bathroom and who has to sit and wait,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, gets to...
When we do certain activities.
Yeah, yeah. All that is controlled by this one person. And so immediately you have this example being set for a child.
And that, you have all of the children being the same age.
Yeah. And that separates people so that they can't get the example of how older people are supposed to act. So when you have this formula with this teacher as the authority, a lot of anarchists talk about the issue with the state is that it's the gun in the room that nobody wants to talk about. The state is always the gun in the room. The backing of the state is always the threat. Ultimately, the state exists because we know that if you resist the state to a certain point, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, that's the last resort weapon of the state. They will kill you.
Right.
You don't want to pay your taxes, they'll send you a letter. You still don't want to pay your taxes, they'll send a guy out to knock on your door and hand you a letter.
Mm-hmm.
You still don't want to pay your taxes, they'll send a guy out to your door who will take you away and put you in a cage. And then you'll get to talk to another guy who's dressed in a big black robe, and he thinks he's really important, and he has a title. And if you still don't want to pay your taxes, they'll take everything you own, and they'll put you in a cage. And if you try to resist them taking you and putting you in a cage and taking all your property, then they'll begin the punishment,
mm-hmm.
the physical punishment. And it starts with taser, or spray, or a beat down. But eventually, if you don't pay your taxes, they will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't contain you in a cage, if they can't beat you down and keep you quiet, at some point in time, and it's not just pay your taxes.
No, it's anything.
It's anything. You run a red light by accident, or you decide it's 3 o'clock in the morning and there's nobody coming in any direction, so you cruise through a stop sign, and they decide that that's unacceptable.
Or you don't mow your lawn.
You don't, yeah. You decide to grow tomatoes in your front yard, like the one lady in, I think it was in St. Paul, or anyway, wherever. It doesn't matter how minor the thing is. Ultimately, it's the gun in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, if you play the thing out logically in your mind, you grew tomatoes in your front yard. The city didn't authorize it. The city sends out somebody onto your private property. You resist them, you can die.
Mm-hmm.
They can legally kill you because you resisted their attempts to take your tomato plants.
And so when you're dealing with, I mean, this is the biggest bully
right.
on the schoolyard,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so your decisions on how to deal with bullies first say, how do we deal with this big bully?
Right.
You know, you say, okay, well, I can resist.
Mm-hmm.
And which I'll die.
Which will cause a beatdown.
Or...
That's the same with the bully.
Yeah.
You can try to fight the bully. You'll probably get a beatdown.
Or I can comply,
mm-hmm.
In which case I will have lunch money stolen from me. I will have, you know, I will have to obey by these certain rules.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's... You have to do that, you know?
But this is the same process that you deal with the teacher.
Uh-huh.
Because when the teacher says, no, you can't go to the bathroom, sit down, put your hand down, be quiet. You can't just go, you know what, I'm going to the bathroom and get up and walk out.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will, you know, the teacher will physically stop you. The principal will physically get involved. And nowadays, now that we have police in schools,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know how that became an acceptable thing. Police in the schools, and we think, oh, well, it's because, you know, maybe it's because of Columbine. Maybe because, you know, well, what caused that?
Right.
Making a school like a prison, making a mega school, and in every way, making a prison setting for kids.
And that's, you know, the mega schools are...
Yeah, and you're shuffling them from class to class and different teacher to different teacher every, you know, 40 minutes or whatever, you're switching classes.
And, I mean, in the hallways in schools, I remember, because I went to a big school
mm-hmm.
for high school.
Yeah.
And in the in-between classes, there are, the hallways are packed with children.
Yeah.
And there are no teachers in sight.
Yeah.
The teachers stay in their classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
The children move from classroom to classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just complete
chaos. Yes. And they'll try to say it's anarchy, but no, it's chaos.
Yeah. It's complete chaos.
It's Occupy Wall Street time every single break between classes.
Mm-hmm.
And this creates an atmosphere that guarantees bullies. Mm-hmm. You've already set the example for them. You've shown them the design. The design of bully is right there. It's the state. It's the teacher. It's the principal. It's all the levels of authority. The design is there. And then you're shocked that some people fit that, you know, that they thrive in that situation.
And then they want to make laws against bullying.
Yeah.
And then you know, the bleeding heart liberals say, well, the president needs to get involved with bullying and make sure there are no bullies. How's that going to work? He's the biggest bully of the lot.
It's like going
to a bully and saying, hey, this dude is bullying me. Make them stop bullying me. Okay, I'll only do that if you give me your lunch money. What good is that? It's like buying mob protection for the mob. There's no point in that.
There's a scene, I know you're not familiar with the movie, but there's a scene in Goodfellas where a restaurant owner is becoming tired of having these gangsters, these mobsters, come into his restaurant and push him around, mm-hmm. and run up a tab and don't pay for it, or break things and don't pay for it. So he goes to the higher mobster, who is boss over all of them, and he says, you got to help me. You got to do something about this. These guys are out of control. Well, what do you want me to do? You want me to take a cut of your business? Is that what you want me to do? Yeah, I want you to come in with me. Because he thinks it's going to protect him and his business, right? Well, no. What this does is it takes the bigger gangster with the bigger network of mobsters working for him, and he comes in, and the eventual result is that they way overcharge on the restaurant's credit, they run up the insurance, and they light it on fire. And then they cash out of it. And the guy's stuck with no restaurant at all. And, of course, the mobsters took all the insurance money, right. So he's literally got nothing. But that's what happened. He appealed to one mobster to help him with the other mobster. And that's what you have.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And going to the state to fix problems created by the state,
yeah,
is never going to work.
So what do we do with bullies?
You know, but I guess at the end of the day, that really doesn't help the kid,
right,
who is facing a bully at school.
Right. And we have a couple answers. First off, don't have your kids in public school.
Right. Best answer.
That's the best answer, is to keep your kids away from public schools and keep your kids away from kids who go to public schools.
Right. Now, and keep your kids away from private schools that are run like public schools.
Exactly. Now, that's not always feasible. You can't always do that.
Although it's kind of heartening because there are more and more private schools that are not adopting the public school model.
Yeah.
You know, the Montessori schools and the there's another one that I can never remember the name of that is really good in the way that they run a school.
Mm-hmm.
They keep classrooms very small and they don't, you know, separate out by age. And so there are options if you need to school and can't homeschool.
I had advantages growing up in dealing with bullies that are unfair advantages because of my size. And, you know, starting about the fifth grade, I began to physically work out and really develop fighting skills. And so by the time that I got into high school, I didn't much have to worry about bullies. Mm-hmm. I would just basically go into the new school, look around for the bully, and before he could start anything with me, I would rough him up pretty bad and make an example of him. And now, in some senses, that makes me look like the bully.
Mm-hmm.
But really it wasn't, because I didn't then perpetuate that and go on out through the rest of it. But I would basically look around, see who the bully was. As soon as he started to approach me, I would figure out, you know, I would do the old prison thing. Mm-hmm. You pick out the biggest one, you drop him, and then after that, you don't have to deal with it anymore. And the prison, that's the old prison.
That was back when they didn't have cops in schools.
Yeah, exactly. And oddly enough, that development of prison behavior, of understanding how to go into a prison And first off, you mind your own business, you keep your head down, you don't get into anybody else's stuff or anything like that. But the second that the first one comes up and starts to approach you, you come down on him hard and fast and mercilessly and just really do some damage. And then you never have to worry about the rest.
Right.
That's the old prison way of dealing with this situation. And that's what I developed in high school. So that by the time I got to high school, my bully problem was gone.
High school.
It's exactly the same process. The problem is, like you're saying, now we have cops, which is, you know, like in prison, there are more guards. But here's the problem with that. Not everybody can have the opportunity, as I had, to physically defend yourself in that way.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a unfair advantage, I suppose, in that I was female. And so I could get into fights and things like that and not get in trouble because I was a female.
Yeah,
because
you're the victim.
Right. And so when I had bully issues, and I had by the time I had reached about junior high, I had stopped caring.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really don't pick on people who don't care.
Yeah.
Because they don't get a rise out of you.
Yeah.
You know? And it wasn't like, you know, there are a lot of teenagers who put on the mask of not caring and really, really do care. But I really wasn't one of those. Mm-hmm. I really was not interested. I was really, like, marking off the days till I could get out of there, and, you know. And so when...
Like if you were in prison?
Well, yeah. And so, you know, I never got involved in anything, mm-hmm. you know. I really kept to myself and just sort of did my time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the couple of instances with bullies that I had, I was able to either verbally just annihilate them to mm-hmm. the point where, you know, they were tail tucked between their legs running for mommy, or I'm of a good enough physical size that I was able to put them in their place.
Yeah.
Without having to get into, you know, principles and problems like that.
And this is something, too, that it should be pointed out. Since we have bullies everywhere from a kindergarten little kid who wants to steal your truck,
mm-hmm.
all the way up to bullies being, you know, the president of the United States is essentially a bully.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just decides, you know what, I think... Even though the leadership in Libya has been working with us and been doing everything we've been telling them to do, and we're just going to go ahead and finance the destruction of their country anyway, mm-hmm. or we're just going to go ahead and lob, cruise missiles in anyway. So from the highest level of bully, which is the president of the United States, all the way down to that little rotten little kid in kindergarten who steals your plastic truck, each situation of bullying... you have to analyze each one, not so much with the zero aggression principle as with Sun Tzu.
Right.
You have to say, am I battling this situation on my battlefield or their battlefield? Am I fighting according to their timing or my timing?
Mm-hmm.
Am I using their weapons or my weapons?
Mm-hmm.
Is the purpose of this battle to defeat them, or is the purpose to not have a battle, or is the purpose to prevent a different battle? And weigh these things out and know yourself and know your enemy, and then you begin to know how to deal with them.
From a strictly moral perspective, anytime you have someone coming after you to do bodily harm or property harm,
mm-hmm.
you have every moral right to defend your property and yourself as far as you can go.
Right, all the way from the plastic truck in the kindergarten yard right up to the government thug who wants to do whatever.
Right.
You have the right to take them down.
Right.
But that may not be the smartest
thing
to do.
And so, you know, if a burglar breaks into your house in the middle of the night and you defend yourself, that's good.
Right.
But if the BATF breaks into your house in the middle of the night... from a strictly moral perspective, you have every right to defend yourself.
Yeah.
From a pragmatic perspective, it's mm-hmm. best not to.
Well, that's like what we were talking about with the SWAT team and that Marine mm-hmm. in, I believe it was in Arizona. Might have been New Mexico, but I'm thinking Arizona. The SWAT team had him confused with a drug dealer, so they made a hard entry on this guy's house. As they breached the door, he's laying in the hallway with, I think it was an AR-15 pointed at the door, and he entirely had the advantage in the situation. Mm-hmm. He hesitated because he thought they were the good guys, so he hesitated. And they shot him like 70 times and then let him lay there for an hour and bleed to death. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't do anything to get an emergency personnel to him, to get him to the hospital. They just left him. They literally stood over him and joked while he bled to death. Now, he was the good guy and they were the bad guys mm-hmm. in that situation. This is not cop bashing.
Right.
This is talking about the specific cops that were involved in this. Those guys were the bad. They were the thugs. They were the bad guys. And each situation is different. Should you resist when the cops come busting in? Well, in the vast majority of the cases, if you resist against the cops, even though they're the bullies, mm-hmm. they're breaking into your house for no reason, you resist, you will die. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, with that guy's situation, he didn't resist. He held his fire, and he died. Mm-hmm. Had he just gone ahead and opened up, he might have lived.
Right.
Probably not.
Right.
But he was going to die one way or the other.
Right.
You know, because they had already had that intent in their mind.
Right.
They're coming in hard and fast. And any excuse they see is an excuse for them to open up. So each situation, you have to realize what's to your best advantage. Is it to my best advantage to go ahead and make a stand here and die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be.
Mm-hmm.
According to what bully you're dealing with. You know, let's a different scenario. You're at the ATM and you are withdrawing a couple hundred dollars, and normally you're very careful, and let's say you are fully armed. Let's say you do everything right. You have your concealed carry permit, you've got the right gun, you're good with it, you have practiced, you've gone through all the classes, you're proficient with your firearm, you have it with you. You're doing everything right, but you make one slip up and you don't realize that for one moment there's a person there that you didn't realize they were that close, and all of a sudden they've got a gun in your face. What do you do?
Right.
You have the capacity to fight back, but it might be better just to hand them the $200.
Right.
And deal with it some other way. Now, that's not the best way to deal with a bully. It would be best if you could shoot him.
Well, that actually reminds me of that... I don't remember what they're called, but that guy in India who was on the train, and the robbers came through.
Oh yeah. I don't want to say the word because I'll mess it up. I've read it a million times and hardly ever hear it pronounced. Gurkha? Is that right?
I think something like that.
I don't want to confuse him with a... That's a gherkin. I don't want to confuse him with a pickle. But he's a very dangerous, well-trained mm-hmm. soldier.
And, you know, when the... robbers come onto the train and they're taking people's money and jewelry, he's willing to do that. He's willing to give them that money, but, you know, that's not worth making a stand over. But when they try to rape some woman, mm-hmm. that's worth making a stand over, you know.
Yeah, Gurkha. I did pronounce it correctly. Gurkha. So it's like, ha, Gurkha. But close enough. They're from Nepal, and they are fierce. They're actually...
Does that make him Neapolitan?
Yeah. Only if he's newer. Neo. They are actually mercenaries. As much as people like to bash the concept of mercenaries, some of the greatest soldiers in the world mm-hmm. are mercenaries.
And so, you know, when you're talking with your child and you say, you know, your child comes to you and you say, I've got this bully problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, okay, well, is it worth it to make a stand?
Yeah.
You know?
Are you capable of it?
Right.
And
if you're not physically capable of it, is there some mechanism by which you can...
Give yourself an advantage.
Right. because, you know, as a... female, mm-hmm. There are things that I can do to protect mm-hmm. myself that are not lethal, that mm-hmm. give me an advantage over someone who may have a, you know, strength or weight or whatever advantage over me.
Yeah. Actually, and let's just touch that very briefly. Raising two girls, there was something that I always like to emphasize with the girls, and that is the power of the thumb. A lot of people will tell their daughters that a kick to the groin is a good way to defend yourself, especially against an attacking man. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, some men are capable of taking an unbelievable amount of punishment in that area, and still, that just makes them madder,
right.
You know. But if you get a good thumb to the eye, the whole world changes.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, when a thumb gets into the eye, everything becomes a different perspective. So the most important thing with an attacker that you need to keep in mind is that they need to see and they need to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can take away their breath, or if you can take away their vision, their ability to see, then you have rendered them no longer dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and you can use that opportunity to get away. You can't always do that by striking their body pretty much anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The eyes are extremely vulnerable, and the throat is extremely vulnerable. Now, the disadvantage with the eyes is that the head can move at surprising speed,
mm-hmm.
but if you can get your hands on their face, and if a young lady has nice, sharp thumbnails, attractive, well-groomed, sharp thumbnails, she can do a tremendous amount of damage,
mm-hmm.
really quickly and really easily. But as I always taught my girls, this type of defense needs to be, it's just like carrying a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You need to realize that this is close to lethal,
mm-hmm.
and you only deploy it with the greatest of wisdom and reservation.
Discretion,
yes, that's the word. Because, just because somebody said, hey, you have stupid hair,
right.
doesn't mean you need to permanently blind them.
Right.
And that's the situation with dealing with a bully. Is the bully a physical threat?
Mm-hmm.
Then I don't care what the authority says.
Right.
Take him out.
Right.
If you have no other choice, then you have to do what you have to do. But each situation, you need to, don't try to put one blanket answer on what do you do with the bully problem.
Right.
A plus B equals C. Instead, look at the bully problem through the Sun Tzu
mm-hmm.
thought and say, you know, ask yourself this series of questions. If I confront them, will it be under these circumstances? What do I have to gain? What do I have to lose?
Right.
Weigh out these options. Always fight according to your best advantages. Retreat if that's your best advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Surrender if that's your best advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Defeat them quickly and harshly if that's your best advantage. But to learn how to instantly weigh these things out and come up with a conclusion is the key to dealing with a bully.
So I think if your child is having a problem with bullies, the first thing that you need to do is you need to talk with your child and,
mm-hmm.
you know, work out a way that this can be solved.
Yeah.
Because leaving the child to fend for themselves is never really the greatest of options,
mm-hmm.
you know, because when your property rights are threatened, if you are not accustomed to making these sorts of decisions,
yeah.
you can just jump straight ahead to, you know, well, I'm going to take the most. I'm going to come into school with a gun, you know.
Yeah.
And there are levels before that you can get to.
And that's really important, because it is important that you work with your child and give them those other options so that they don't leap to the exaggerated mm-hmm. option of, you know,
and
fine. It's my stapler. You took my stapler. I just burned the building down.
Right. And if it's really a huge problem, and your child is being harassed on a daily basis, protect your child. Get them out of that situation.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's about all the time we've got.
Yeah, folks. Thanks for listening to BadQuaker.com. And there's more coming in this series. We're going to talk about adult relationships between parents and children, and sibling relationships as parents. I mean, that too. But sibling relationships as adult siblings, and even dealing with parents once mm-hmm. the aging process takes place, and keeping that all within the realm of the non-aggressive family. Folks, thanks for listening to BadQuaker.com. Be sure and get over there to the website. And for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to BadQuaker.com. Thank you.